It's Friday, March 13th, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proven of the Tech Podcast Network. Have I got a great show lined up for you? Yes, it is Friday the 13th. I am actually recording on Friday versus Thursday night because I got back from Japan yesterday and I couldn't do it, folks. Had to have some sleep. So recording very early in the morning here. But I got a great show for you, so strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central Podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume. Because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central Podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central Podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, from the Geek News Central Studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey, I want to welcome all of the show. My name is Todd Cochran, and yes, make sure you get over to geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content. Of course, check out the archive podcast available via the podcast link on the website. Hey, I want to welcome all of the Ohana to the podcast. Of course, the Ohana are the folks that are subscribed to the podcast. If you're new to the show, I welcome you, of course, and of course, would hope that you would subscribe to the podcast. You can do that via links found on the website. And, of course, you can subscribe via iTunes or the Zune Marketplace or via your favorite podcatcher. We encourage you to do that so you get the show delivered directly or to your portable media player. You can always listen to the show directly online, of course, at the website as well. Well, I tell you, I'm a little bit out of sequence here this morning. I'm recording early in the morning here in Honolulu versus late in the evening like I normally do. Got back yesterday morning. And did not have very much sleep on the way back on the airplane, and just by the time showtime arrived last night, I was done, stuck a fork in me, and by 8 o'clock last night, I was actually in bed asleep, and slept all night, and got up this morning and said, wow, I need to get a show knocked out. So some of you are joining us for the first time on Ustream during the daytime, which is kind of unusual here, of course, but wanted to get the show out and on the street before the end of the day. So I figured it was a good time to do that this morning. Uneventful flight back from Japan. Everything is doled out, just a pretty normal flight. Spent a lot of time in Narita, about 4.5 hours on a layover in the red carpet lounge. And it was amazing when I was in there because when we first arrived, the red carpet lounge was absolutely full. From one end to the other, it was full. And mostly it was Americans heading back to the United States, although there were some Japanese travelers in there as well. But just a sea of computers from one end to the other, all connected via Wi-Fi. And I was amazed. The red carpet must have some amazing bandwidth in that particular lounge because I saw no slowdown in the connectivity and was talking with my wife on Skype. And it was pretty amazing to see the number of laptops up and being used. And talking with some of the folks in red carpet, we all, to a person that I talked to, everyone was complaining about basically mobile connectivity while in Japan. They said there's no problem when they're in the hotel. There's no problem when they're at a business visiting someone getting connectivity. But when they are actually out and about and trying to find Wi-Fi hotspots and so forth, nearly impossible. And it's just a big frustration on their part. And also mobile broadband cards, which I found as well, were spotty at best. If you were in a major metropolitan area, and I mean major, maybe 500,000 people or more, no problem with the mobile broadband cards working. But as soon as you got just a little bit off the beaten path, in other words, you went into a little smaller community, and I don't even really mean small, maybe communities the size of 50 or 60,000 people, no connectivity whatsoever with the mobile broadband cards. Cell phones continue to work great, but I was very, very disappointed with my mobile broadband service that I paid for. I think if you're staying right in the general Tokyo area, you're probably not going to have an issue, but being that I was down in Okinawa, just the sheer connectivity there was not even as good as it was in Tokyo in the main cities. So maybe it's just because Okinawa is a little bit further behind. I don't know. Maybe the demand isn't as big. But just wanted to relay that experience with you. And I actually kind of thought at the end, I says, for, you know, as much as we complain here in the United States, definitely the connectivity, mobile connectivity, is much, much, much better than it is from what I experienced being in Japan. And I would have thought it to be completely the opposite. Well, I had some interesting experience with the Japanese airport security. Of course, when I travel heavy tech-wise. And my computer bag usually has two or three external hard drives, at least two PCs in it, all my interconnection cables, all of the power supplies for like my Kindle or for my recharger for my camera. You just, you name it. This bag was full. And When I went through security the first time, because I had to go through security twice, I had to go through in the airport down in Naha, they stripped my bag completely. I mean, the bag was laid out, and they brought out these bins. There was at least five or six bins that they brought out and had everything laying flat in the bins that they run through. So I repacked the bag after they got done doing the third or fourth run through the x-ray machine, which was annoying. At about the third point, I was like, come on, guys, give me a break. Isn't your x-ray machine any better than that? Then we got up to Tokyo, and I had to go outside of security in Tokyo because they had not issued me a boarding pass. Went over to the United counter and got my boarding pass, so I had to re-go through security. And once again, tore my bag down to parade rest. So if you're going to be traveling and you don't want to be delayed getting to your gate, or don't want to have to be embarrassed, pack as much of your stuff that you can in your suitcase when traveling in Japan, because for some reason, they're either their x-ray machines aren't as good, or they're just extra heavy on the screening security. But, you know, all these Japanese people are looking at me funny because here it is, camera, iPhone, we've got maybe the cell phone from Japan. We've got a video camera. We've got the chargers. We have the external hard drives. We have, what else? The Kindle. We've got the two laptops. I mean, just, and not to mention all the other stuff that was in my bag, too. Anything that could be considered thick enough for them not to be able to x-ray through, they had it out. And, wow, what a mess. But, hey, they were very thorough, and I felt very safe knowing that they were doing that that good of a job. Now, I had received a bunch of Twitter requests while I was gone from people that were asking me about Okinawa specifically and how I had commented there that the economy looked like it had really suffering. And I guess from my perspective, going around some of the places I have been before, many of the businesses that I have frequented, many of the restaurants that I had frequented in the past were simply non-existent. They were gone. They were closed, boarded up, and looked like they had been for quite a while. Now, this was in one specific area that I was in. But then again, when I was in different areas, I saw a lot of businesses open, a lot of matter of fact, very booming businesses, restaurant areas, bar district areas, types of that type of stuff that were doing very well. So it's almost like the economy has shifted from one area to another. Of course, with the American military presence there being so significant, there a lot of that business is driven by where Americans go. And but, you know, overall, the Japanese people, the economy there is so bad that people are suffering considerably, much more. They're suffering more that there than they are here. And it's just amazing how little your dollar really buys or how much the yen really buys. I remember going to a Japanese grocery store, picking up some items that would normally, I would think, you know, if I went to the checkout counter here in the United States, even if I was in a 7-Eleven or some sort of a convenience store like that, with these particular items, maybe, you know, a couple, some chips and, you know, maybe a six pack of beer, you know, just that kind of stuff. And, you know, expecting maybe a $20 bill charge and you end up with a, you know, $70 or $80 worth of, you know, that was the actual total that it came out in yen. So, you know, the dollar doesn't go as far there and the economy as bad as it is. Really, I don't know how some people are surviving. I do know that many people are working two, three jobs and not necessarily high paying jobs at that. So it is definitely a challenge there, and But anyway, I just wanted to give it a little bit of an update. People were asking me specifically on Twitter about Okinawa, so I thought I would share that with them. And I know that many of those folks listen to the podcast. Hey, I do have a lot of tech stuff for you today, so we'll get into that here in a few moments. But one of my biggest finds this trip was a specific type of Japanese tea, and I'm a big iced tea drinker. Normally, Lipton iced tea is what I drink here, but I fell in love with a new type of tea that I found in Japan. I don't even know exactly what the name of it is. I know the packages of it because I brought 10. My wife kind of looked at me kind of like, you've got enough tea here for like 2 years. Why did you bring back so much? I brought back 10 packages of this stuff, and I think there's like 54 of the little tea packets in each one. So, yeah, I'll have enough for a while. But just every once in a while, when you find something you like and you know that you're not going to have access to it where you're going, like here in the United States, I know I can't get that. I just had to bring enough back to hold me over until I get back there and able to pick up some more. So kind of one of those weird one-off things. Okay, we're going to have a Tech Podcast Roundtable on March 21st. Andy McCaskey's working on the schedule for that. So I look forward to being able to announce what the topics of that is. So last month's roundtable was huge. We've had huge response to it. And, of course, I hope that you guys will tune in for this month's roundtable. It'll be happening on March 21st. Of course, that is sponsored by GoToMeeting. So if you spend too much time driving or flying to meet clients in person, stop letting travel costs eat away at your bottom line. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting, brought to you by Citrix. GoToMeeting lets you launch sales presentations, product demos, or training sessions right from your computer. It's like meeting in person, but less expensive and less time-consuming. Meet from your office, home, or hotel room anytime, anywhere. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.goToMeeting.com/techpodcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/techpodcast with an S for a free trial. Thanks for GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the show. Hey, do have a number of voicemails to go into later on in the podcast today. It's just like the floodgates opened up. So we've got 4 voicemails and a number of emails as well from the show. So we'll have that covered at the end of the podcast. If you want to comment on today's show or previous show, geeknews@gmail.com is the email address, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Of course, we want to encourage everyone to sign up for our newsletter so you get the show notes delivered directly to your inbox as well. Kind of missed that at the beginning of the show. You can find that sign up link on the third column of the website. Finally, GoDaddy.com really is the company that helps me do what I do and helps keep the lights on around here in the form of in their sponsorship support. If you're looking for a domain name, dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, or shared hosting accounts, I got some promo codes that you'll want to pass on or utilize yourself. Domain names, ComSale, that'll get you $7.49 domain names. TODD, that'll save you 10% off. That's the promo code Todd. Of course, Todd20 will get you 20% off on 1 year shared hosting accounts. And then Geek5 will get you 20% off on orders $20 or more. Okay, thanks for GoDaddy for being a continued sponsor here. And of course, thank you for supporting my sponsors that helps us out. Well, I tell you, I feel like I'm missing a few beats here. I guess it's because I'm doing the show in the daylight. I don't know what it is, but I want to welcome those of you that are on Ustream. They're hanging out and watching. And, of course, all of the Ohana longtime listeners of the show, thanks for staying subscribed. Okay, got a first article up today is over on Mark Cuban's website. And I think I had asked myself this question, too. And the question he asked is, where does tweet time come from? How many, many of you have become very heavy users of Twitter. I don't consider myself a super heavy user because I've optimized my reading of Twitter via RSS and also posting on a periodic basis. I don't spend, all my active time on there refreshing pages. But I know a lot of people are completely engrossed in the in watching their Twitter stream. What has been sacrificed on your end to do this? What are you doing less of that are you watching less TV? Are you listening to fewer podcasts? Are you reading fewer blogs? You know, where does that substitution come from? So I'm kind of curious about that. And, you know, I don't know, for Twitter, a lot of people have turned that into their main content stream. And I don't get that completely, because every once in a while a tidbit will come through. But for the most part, it's, you know, it's generally people's commentary that I'm interested in. I'm not interested necessarily in using it as a source of new material, because I just don't get that much from it. What are you guys seeing? What are you guys using it for primarily? You're just using it to stay in touch with friends and people that you know online? I'm kind of curious on that portion as well. Comments to geeknews@gmail.com on this article, of course. Moving on here, there was a incident that happened where an iPod Touch was being utilized by, I guess this, how old was this individual? I guess the kid was young. As they say, a kid, so they don't actually say his age. But apparently, a iPod Touch overheated and actually caught on fire, and it set this individual's pants on fire. And I find this just absolutely hard to believe, be honest with you, because if you have something in your pocket and it's getting hotter and hotter and hotter, you're going to be pretty inclined to remove that pretty quickly. But this is what's being said. It says the mother of a kid living in Cincinnati, Ohio, is suing Apple and 10 unnamed retail employees from the Apple store in Kenwood over an iPod Touch that has allegedly exploded in a child's pocket. And it was a complaint filed in the Southern District of Ohio. It refers to the iTouch that he had in his pocket during school when the accident happened, resulting in a hospital bills. And I guess the kid got second-degree burns from the device. It said that the iPod Touch was in the off position when it unexpectedly popped and caused the kid to feel a burning sensation. That's pretty amazing. That's scary. Now, you know, reading into this makes you wonder what was going on there with why that would have happened in the office. I guess, you know, thermal runaway on the battery, but pretty scary stuff. So maybe these iPod Touches or any of these, you know, at what point are we going to start seeing more homes burn down because of these lithium ion batteries? As many iPods, as many laptops as I have around here, it just makes you wonder, yeah? And it just makes you wonder at what point where will the FAA start banning lithium ions on aircraft? Or when will aircraft have to have some sort of a mechanism in order to eject these things at altitude? You know, that's what most military aircraft have got. They've got a way to eject stuff in case there's a fire on board, either through a free fall chute or they can open the door actually at a lower altitude and toss stuff out. You wouldn't necessarily see that happen on a commercial airline flight, but you would wonder if they're going to have to put in something into some process in place to get rid of batteries that are overheating or catch on fire like this. But not good at all. But keep you advised on this. We'll see where it goes. Again, this is again a lawsuit, and I'm sure there's two sides to every story, but I would be a very upset parent if that would have happened to my kid. It really would have. All right, South by Southwest is going on, and every year the folks at South by Southwest Music Festival release a huge file of music that's being highlighted at the event. This year's torrent that's available online is 6 gigabytes. And it contains 1,267 MP3s of both upcoming as well as established artists who will be appearing at this year's festival. And I've downloaded it for the past couple of years. So I have the link up to the article on this. You'll be able to get this torrent. 6 gigs, again, of South by Southwest music. 1,267 music tracks. Last year, I think I deleted about 75% of the music because I wasn't interested in it. So So it should be a pretty full. You should be able to get some good stuff there, depending on your music taste. I'm trying to read here something on Ustream. It says you don't get that much new info. You're following the wrong people. No, I get a lot of info, but I don't get a lot of it that translates into blog posts or, you know, I'm following the right people. I'm following a lot of people on Twitter. Matter of fact, I have to set my RSS feed up to refresh at a pretty high rate to keep up. So that's the challenge for sure. Of course, that's a challenge as well, is just keeping up with following everybody. Okay, move on here. Let me go ahead and load the next article up. There is a post over on guardian.co.uk, and this is kind of on a climate issue. And there's a gentleman by the name of, let me see what's his name, Nicholas Stern. He's a economist that was commissioned by Gordon Brown to analyze the impact of climate change. And it appears that a bunch of climate folks, a bunch of scientists who have come together again for, you know, how come every climate meeting is an emergency meeting? You know, it seems like every time that there's folks meeting for a, well, I just lost the article. Every time that these folks meet to talk about climate change and talk about greenhouse gases and all this stuff, it's always an emergency. You know, it's never just a normal meeting. It's always an emergency. So, but I guess 2,500 scientists at this emergency meeting are saying that we need to do something immediately to cut the amount of carbon that we're being putting into the atmosphere. Has to be done immediately. Has to be done this year. You know, it's like, okay, tell us we need to remove, you know, lower carbon emissions. I understand that. But, you know, if we don't, they're going into this, you know, the scare tactic. If we don't do it this year, it's, you know, we're not going to be able to recover. It's going to be irrecoverable. There'll be devastating challenges for people in the years ahead. I'm like, here's his warning. He's stark warning about the potentially devastating consequences of global warming. Came a scientist issued a desperate plea last night for world leaders to curb greenhouse gas emissions or face an ecological and social disaster. So he says there's no excuse for failing to act on global warming this year. A failure to agree to strong carbon reduction targets, all political negotiations this year could bring an abrupt or irreversible shifts in climate that will be difficult for contemporary societies to cope with. Okay, we all know that we should reduce carbon emissions, but, you know, we've heard this like how many years now? Has anybody done anything? Very little. Are they going to do anything? Doubtful. And here's the reason, you know, are you going to get China to reduce carbon emissions? You know, are you going to get other developing worlds to remove carbon emissions? No. Or lower it? No way. You're not. They're not going to do it. There has to be, you know, something else is going to have to happen. And maybe what it is we're going to have to see sea levels rise or something like that before someone reacts. But I just don't see how they can, you know, they can say this every day of the week for the next 20 years and based upon people's or countries' economic conditions, I don't think they're going to reduce carbon emissions. Just don't think it'll happen. We all think it. I'm sure all of us could agree that we'd like to see it happen, but what's the reality of it actually, something actually being done? You know, I don't know. Okay, moving on to a little more of a tech phase here. Over on lifehacker.com, 10 must-have Gmail filters available for download. And to be honest with you, I've used filters quite a bit in Gmail for a long time. I'm looking through some of these filters like, oh, these are kind of cool. So here's a list of pretty cool Gmail filters. Are just some generic ones that you may find useful. So if you're using Gmail a lot, definitely check this out. And to give you some ideas, maybe allow you to create some new ones. So I have this linked up for you in the show notes. All right. University of Miami physicists develop battery using new source of energy. Researchers at the University of Miami and in conjunction with the University of Tokyo have been able to prove the existence of what they call a spin battery. It's a battery that is charged by applying a large magnetic field to nanomagnets in a device called a magnetic tunnel junction. They say that this new technology is a step towards the creation of a computer hard drives with no moving parts. I thought we already had computer hard drives with no moving parts. Aren't they called SSDs? Says, which would be much faster, less expensive, and use less energy than current ones. In future, the batteries could be developed to power cars. The study will be published in an upcoming issue of Nature and is available in an online advanced publication of the journal. So they're saying that this could be game-changing if it's ever been able to scale to the size that they need it to scale to. So they're saying that the what's behind this technology is the use of the nanomagnets to induce a electromotive force, which I think most of you could probably, if you don't understand how electromotive force works, just do EMF, what is EMF in Google. And it basically uses the same principle as those in a conventional battery, except in a more direct fashion. The energy stored in a battery, be it an iPod or electric car, is a form of a chemical energy. That's what's being done today. When something is turned on, there's a chemical reaction which occurs and produces an electric current. The new technology converts the magnetic energy directly into electrical energy without a chemical reaction. That's kind of cool. Electrical current made in this process called a spin polarized current and finds use in a new technology called spintronics. So I received two or three emails today on this, not only from listeners, but from PR people. They're pushing this heavy. Seems to be people are pretty excited about this. And I think the sole fact that this is they're able to create electrical current without a chemical reaction from a battery is huge. It really is huge. And the possibilities there are pretty endless. Okay, 12 excellent tools for picking a domain name. And, you know, I get very, very antsy about using these types of services. And here's why. First of all, I don't know who to trust out there when I'm searching for a domain name. I know who I do trust, and that's the register that I promote on this show at, of course, GoDaddy.com. But many times when I'm looking for a specific domain, I'm worried about using one of these sites because many times what I find, if I don't register right away, ends up getting hijacked. So I'm assuming here that these folks over at sixrevisions.com have reviewed these sites for their reliability and ability, or actually their non-ability of stealing. I guess does that make sense? Their reliability and or trustworthiness, probably that's a better word for it. But a couple of them here that they've listed is domainr.nr, .onator, that can be found at .dotomator.com, bustaname at bustaname.com, domaintools.com. I think I've seen this one before. Domize.com. I'll have this list full of us in the show notes here. But if you're looking for a specific domain name, boy, it can be a challenge. And with so many domain names already taken up, many times you're just left with one choice, going out and buying the domain that you want from the person that has it and usually paying a hefty sum to get those domains. You know, that's something with a down economy, something that all of you should be looking at. If there's a domain name that you have been wanting for a long time, but the price on it has been too high, then you should consider actually trying to purchase the domain right now. It's a good time to buy domains. I've actually picked up close to a dozen domains here in the last month through domain auctions because people are not renewing their domains. So this is a good time to watch the domain auction sites as well to pick up some domains that you think maybe have value in the future, or, you know, something that you'll want to use personally. I've been if you go over to Pepsi, COZ. Oh, I'm just going to have to put this up in the show notes. This is way too long of a domain name. But what it is, oh, actually, you can go to PepsiCo.com/SXSW. And what this is, it's a Twitter stream of the conference. And Southwest, jeez, I'm having a hard time on the show. You guys can tell me that this morning? South by Southwest. And so it's pretty cool. And they've got it. I wish I could have one of these running on a big screen for stuff that's going on with Raw Voice and with PowerPress, and have a, you know, a bunch of custom terms it looks for. But today they're tracking those that are arriving, those that are drinking, those that are registering, those that are eating, those that are connecting, and those that are partying. And it has a complete Twitter stream up, which is kind of cool, and you can watch this. So it's at PepsiCo.com/SXSW. So I have this link up for you. Of course, the event's been going on already for a while, but the music portion of the event is getting ready to kick off here next week. All right, it appears that the International Space Station had a close one. In other words, they had a close encounter with a piece of space debris. The International Space Station 3 crew members climbed into their Soyuz lifeboat as a precautionary member while a piece of space junk passed by today. NASA said that the space agency said that the debris from a spent satellite rocket motor zipped past, apparently without causing any damage, and the crew was given the all-clear to return to the station and resume normal operations. But they actually put the station in an unmanned mode, mounted up in the lifeboat, and got ready to disconnect if they had to. But apparently the piece of space debris was about 5 inches in size, and let's see here. The space junk would have been moving at about 28,000 miles per hour. And they said if it would have hit the space station, it would have been like taking a 60-pound safe and throwing it at you at 64 miles per hour. So that would be the impact equivalent. So, yeah, I'm thinking about that. A 64-pound safe. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that would have hurt, and it would have definitely made a big impact. But this is like the fifth time since the International Space Station has been up that the crew has had to take these types of precautionary measures. They have a safety region around the International Space Station that measures 0.75 kilometers above and below the station and 25 kilometers on each side. And so I guess it's 0.47 miles up and down by 15 by 6 miles wide. Kind of a weird, kind of almost like a pizza box type of cone of area that they watch out for. They normally get a much longer advance notice, and then they move the station whichever way they need to move it to get it out of the debris zone. But I guess they were not informed about this until the last moment. Or actually within a few hours of it coming into, basically the path of the ISS. I wonder how, that's got to be pretty amazing how they're tracking all that stuff. It's got to be all computer tracked, don't you think? There has to be, I bet you the math they're doing on that is pretty complex. Because, a lot of these objects are not staying, they're not in a stable orbit. They're in a constant constant flux of deorbiting. And, I'd like to see see an article on that someday about the full how they're doing all this tracking and what they do with the different satellites, if they have to, how often they have to move a satellite, if they even can, or often impacts happen with other, because he's like they can have these micro strikes as well on satellites, and I think those happen on a regular basis, but you don't hear too often of these little bigger pieces of stuff impacting. Of course, we see what happens when two satellites collide together, because it's not a pretty sight. But anyway, I'll have this linked up in the show notes for you. Okay, the iPod Shuffle, the new iPod Shuffle that's been released. I'm looking at this thing, and I watched the Apple review of this. It looks pretty cool, and pretty innovative what they've done with the controls on the earbuds. But how small do we have to go on these devices? What was wrong with the old Shuffle where you could press play, forward, reverse, pause? I don't really get it. I don't really get why they had to go for this design where there was, virtually no controls on it. What do you guys think about this new device? And it's obviously very small, and I'm sure people that run will love this. People that go to the gym, I can imagine that group of people using it. But if I gave one of these to my kids, I don't think my kids would like it, because of the simple fact that they just wouldn't be able to manipulate as much. You know, they've got some. They've got they've got my son has a portable media player that has a little itty bitty screen on it, and he loves it because he can scroll through real quick and find the music he wants to listen to or the playlist he's got loaded. Of course, my daughter has a Zune Marketplace or the Zune, and she has, you know, the Marketplace stuff that she can play and select from. So they're used to using a screen. How many of you are? Do you think this is a good? You know, good investment for kids, or what are you guys going to use this new one for? Do you even like the new design? So far, from what I've seen, not a lot of positive reviews on this thing. But you got to admit, it's small. It's tiny. It's almost so tiny that I'd be afraid I'd lose it someplace. Anyway, I have the link up to the review. And if you haven't seen the demo yet, do so. But if you really want to kind of get an idea on the size of this thing, and think about it. If you take the picture they've got on the Gizmodo site shows a Tylenol 500 aspirin basically laid on top of it. And really, the device is no wider than a Tylenol 500. So, you know, maybe what we're going to talk, maybe it's definitely less than a half inch. So probably 6/16ths or something in width. It's not very wide at all. And they've actually stripped down a couple of these in some other sites as well. So not a lot to it, but definitely, it's innovative, but you're locked into using the headsets provided by Apple until the third-party folks get something together. All right, image of the day today is not a space shot. It is a geek shot, and it comes from Wired. And when you see this, someone that's into building buildings or wiring buildings. Maybe you guys have seen something like this before, but I'm looking at this picture and quite literally my jaw has dropped open. All I can say is it looks like a mass of wires that probably is about a foot thick by maybe 2 feet wide. Just a huge mass. There's got to literally has to be thousands and thousands of wires in this wiring mass. And I have no idea. This is either phone lines. I haven't got a clue. When you guys see this, someone that builds buildings, please tell me what this is, what this picture represents. Someone out there has to know what this is. But I'll have this linked up in the show notes. And when you see it, you're going to be like, wow. And first of all, I can't even imagine being the guy that had to lay these all in and wire these up. It's just unimaginable to me. It really is. Over on Wired, there is a pretty cool story, and it's non-techie related. It's about a diamond heist that happened a number of years ago. And the full story on how the heist took place and how the technology was beat is out. By the person that basically has spent some time in prison for actually being the mastermind behind it. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I watched the video on it and said these guys are pretty smart when they did this. So I'll have this linked up in the show notes if you guys are interested, you can check it out. But just kind of a point of interest story. How many of you want to run your own mini Twitter? Well, I got turned on to this today. Saw a reference in one of the sites about Dave Weiner opening his own kind of like Twitter stream. And he's using a program called Laconia, L-A-C-O-N-I. And it's actually called Laconica. And it's at L-O-C-O-N-I.ca is the website that it's at. And it's a free open source microblogging platform. It helps people in the community or a group exchange short 140 character messages over the web. Users can choose which people to follow and receive only their friends and colleagues status message. And it provides a similar service to sites like Twitter, Jaiku, or Plurk. So I've got to thinking about this day a little bit, how this could be implemented on individuals' websites. And I think as we're moving forward with the development of Geek News Central on WordPress, I may have to kind of incorporate this as well as a sub page within the actual website itself. So yes, that is moving forward. And the reason we are finally moving forward with that is that Angelo, my lead developer at Raw Voice, was able to finally get some of the features I needed to complete the change built into our PowerPress podcast plugin, which has been released. Version 0.7.1 is on the street, probably with a bug release to come out 0.7.2 sometime this weekend, because we found a couple of bugs people have reported since we've updated. But it's the biggest and largest feature increase on the plugin since we started development on it over a year ago. Amazingly, the response has been nothing but positive. And what I was waiting for was the ability to have multiple RSS feeds from a single stream of post. And what this is going to allow me to do is now when you come to geeknewscentral.com, you'll notice that on geeknewscentral.com, the front page, there's a RSS feed for that portion of the website. Then you go to the podcast section, there is a podcast feed. You go to the special media section, which actually is, I'm behind in updating, has its own feed. And those are three separate blogs. And what I want to get away from is having three separate blogs, being able to have a single blog, but at the same time maintain three separate feeds and for the specific content that you all are subscribed to. And with the new plugin, I'm going to be able to do that, which is going to help my Google PageRank, because many times some of the stuff I post in one portion of the website is posted on another portion of the website in a dual posting just to get it into its specific RSS feed. And I haven't been able to separate the two in the past, which I get penalized by Google for doing that, for having a double post. So now that he's got this set up where I can basically control on a post-to-post basis which content goes into which feed, it's huge. It's going to be really huge. It's going to allow me to eliminate some of the duplication that I have across the website, and then I can use the category function that's within WordPress itself to separate some of this other stuff. So now we're going to move forward. Just got to get the now we're talking about maybe incorporating a little bit of this Laconica into the site design, because I just think this is cool to have kind of like a mini Twitter stream on my own site, and that those that are subscribed to the site could follow separately. I think is going to be a good idea, and I can do more site specific stuff, and that way I can eliminate some of the stuff I'm putting actually in the Twitter stream today. So I'll be playing with that. And if you guys are using this at all, I'd love to hear back from you on this as well. Or if you can think of a good way this can be implemented on your own sites, it'd be cool as well. So send your comments over to geeknews@gmail.com or the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. If you're excited about Windows 7, if you're as excited as I am, you're going to want to check out some more changes that they made from the beta to the release candidate. There's been some pretty cool stuff going on in the desktop environment. Control panels changing a little bit. The Windows Explorer and libraries are making some improvements. They're doing some cool stuff with performance as well, especially on shutdown and log off. They're working on improvements to the device portion of the application. The list goes on and on here. They've got 27 different improvements or changes that are made to what we've seen in the beta going into the release candidate. So anyway, great list here, lots of detail, and of course lots of comments on there as well. They'll be over on the on the IE7 blog. I'll have that linked up in the show notes. All right, there's a new mobile carrier that's promising unlimited 3G data, and also using the way they're doing it is unlimited 3G data and unlimited voice IP. And you're saying, okay, Todd, that's a mobile phone? Yes. What they're doing is they are, I guess, subleasing network space from AT&T. And in order to get around some of the rules AT&T has laid upon this carrier and subleasing carrier time, or however they do this when a new company comes online, they're actually tunneling. When you get your phone with this company, it's called Zero One Mobile, or Z-E-R-O-1 Mobile is the actual name of it. What they're going to do is each phone is actually going to get an IP, and it establishes a VPN link between your phone and their service. So that when you make a phone call, what happens is, instead of it going from the mobile carrier to the tower, to a landline, from a landline to another tower, to another, you know, or to another, you know, land-based phone, another mobile phone, they actually take you straight out from the tower into an IP network to their server, voice IP you to wherever you need to go, and connect you that way. So what they're going to be able to do is provide unlimited 3G data and voice IP through this new service. This is pretty cool because they've eliminated traditional circuit switch voice calling and got by all that. And that's how they're working it. Now, normally, there has not been a lot of success with voice IP over GSM networks. But apparently they've gotten some pretty cool proprietary technology that is allowing them to tie their dialer app straight into their service. So a limited number of phones, though, are going to be able to be used on this. You actually bring your own phone, your own unlocked phone, and they will provide you with the necessary information to get connected. They do sell three phones. They're going to sell three HTC phones. They're selling the TYTN2, it's also known as the AT&T Tilt. They're going to have the Touch Diamond and the Touch 3G. I believe the Touch 3G and Touch Diamond are pretty powerful phones in themselves. I'll have to ask Jeffrey over at geekazine.com because he's familiar with the HTC line of phones much more than I am. They're also going to be pushing to get on Windows mobile devices, and they're also looking to launch onto other operating systems as well. So this is kind of cool. We'll have to see what this amounts to. But for $69.95, it is pretty appealing that you get unlimited 3G data. If their technology and speed is as good as they say they're going to be, then I think that a lot of us geeks out there that are looking for, you know, some unlimited data plans may be inclined to give these folks a try. So if you've signed up with them or know someone that has or is working in their beta, I'd love to really hear from you guys about that. I really would, to see how well it's working out. Hey, there was an interesting discussion on by Jason Calacanis. When new people sign up for Twitter, they are offered a list of 20 people to immediately start following. And those 20 have kind of been updating on a regular basis. But they've had people, they've had major celebrities, they've had New York Times. I think we've talked about this on the show already. But people are thinking that those 20 spots, or at least Jason is thinking, that those 20 spots are going to be worth a lot of money. So what he has offered is he has offered $120,000 to the folks at Twitter. He says he's going to write the check and send it to him to be on the top 20 list for a year. And he'll pay as much as $250,000 to be listed in that top 20 list for 2 years. He wants to lock in his spot on the suggested list. He believes that he could gain as many as 3.6 million followers a year from being on that top or being in that suggested list. Now, as you start to think about that, folks, and you do the math on that, as much money as that sounds like, to get that many followers and to get that many getting your links to your content, information about your shows, I'm going to tell you, if Twitter had this available, and you could, hate to say it, buy your way in to that suggested list, if I had the money, I'd have to really think about it. Because You know, some people think it, hey, okay, you know, you work hard to get the people that follow you. You know, those people are worth more than people that just kind of follow you arbitrarily. But if you think that let's say 75% of the people that initially follow you unfollow you, you're still left with a huge number of new dedicated followers. I don't know. Love to hear what you guys have thought on this. This has provoked quite the discussion stream. And one thing it will be for sure is it's definitely going to, once again, break out the haves and the have-nots. You know, I don't have 120 grand to lay down to get a year's worth of coverage on the top 20 recommended slots. But boy, it sure is intriguing to think about what it could create if I could. And he feels, at least Jason Calacanis feels, that a top 20 spot on Twitter at some point in the future could be worth as much as $1 million or $2 million a year. So he wants to lock it in early before the price goes up. So that is an interesting concept that the folks at Twitter could employ as a business model. Now, the question, though, becomes, is once they take money for that, they would have to put on there sponsored, right? Sponsored followers. Would that make people less inclined to follow those people? As it's going right now, those people that are on those top 20 follower lists are gaining huge, huge numbers of followers. You know, overnight, 20, 30,000, as many as 20 or 30,000 people a day are following those new accounts. So, or from new accounts are following those people in those top 20 lists. So, it's an interesting concept that, I don't have the 120K to do it, but if they were offering it, boy, I tell you, you'd really have to weigh what it would be worth. And I think it would be worth it in the long run if I had the money. But again, who's got that kind of money to lay down to, put yourself into that top 20 spot? Only the rich. And, definitely I'm not rich. Over on TechCrunch, and I guess we should say this, congratulations to the web, because the web turns 20 years old today. And in a TED Talk, and it's linked in this article on TechCrunch, Tim Berners-Lee recalls how he invented the World Wide Web 20 years ago. And of course, it was a play project that let his boss do on the side. Berners-Lee notes that the original web was for connecting documents together online, and that he argues quite eloquently why the web now has to evolve from linked documents to linked data. And we all know that evolution is well underway already. But this is a great this is a speech well worth watching. So I'll have this linked up to you in the show notes. And to listen to this guy talk, I think you're going to gain a lot of insight into why they originally, you know, how the web has evolved the way it has, and probably where we're headed to. So I'll have this link up in the show notes. Probably this is the video you'll want to watch if you watch any of the videos that are linked to any of the content today. Hey, a little bit more space news. The Mars Orbiter computer has been rebooted. NASA's Mars Odyssey spacecraft has successfully rebooted its system this week, a process designed in part to restore a set of backup systems for future use. The spacecraft computer has not been restarted since October of 2003. That's doing pretty good. How many of us can say our computers have not been rebooted for 6 years? And the engineers believe that the reboot of the computer would clear out any memory flaws that had accumulated in the system since then. The reboot did restore the functionality of a component of the computer's B-side or backup system, which became inoperable in 2006. And the spacecraft in orbit since Mars since 2001 has never had to switch to its B-side. And they're saying Odyssey's scientific instruments will resume normal operations next week. That is got to be a little bit of a scary thing. You know, okay, you haven't rebooted the computer since 2003. You've sent a bunch of updates to it. And then you got to hold your breath to make sure that the reboot's going to work. It's not like you can go up there and press the restart switch once you do it. But I guess it was successfully rebooted, and they're quite happy with where they're at. All right, Firefox 3.1 beta has been officially released, and it may become version 3.5. But Mozilla's announced availability of the third beta, And one of the significant things that has been included in this beta, it includes a Firefox new high-performance TraceMonkey JavaScript runtime, which significantly boosts the speed of script execution. I had downloaded it here and been playing around with it, and they gave some demos of some stuff, some link to some demos of what the new JavaScript was capable of. Wow. Really cool. So I have this linked up in the show notes. So if you, those of you that are Firefox users, I think this is a this is the one you want to give a try to. You know, give it a try, because it's definitely see some significant performance increase across websites that I was visiting this morning, plus the cool stuff that it can do. I think we're going to see some enhancements to some people's websites. All right. How many of you guys remember Grand Central? Google bought Grand Central and then immediately shut down new accounts being for people to apply for Grand Central. It's been a long time, 16 months since Google did that acquisition. Well, Google's relaunching Grand Central as Google Voice. And I'm pretty excited about this because I wanted a Grand Central account and I've never gotten one. And in a few weeks here, we're going to start seeing invites and them opening up, making it available to those of us that have been, you know, pounding on their door waiting to get one. And I think you're going to see a lot of companies using this service. And, you know, everyone that's on it on Grand Central right now, they are very happy with it. I think they have to transition, though. They have to transition to the new service. Excuse me, I'm yawning on you. They're going to have to transition to the new service, and they're going to have to get new telephone numbers, I think. I don't think they're going to be able to take their old telephone numbers from Grand Central with them. So I guess from that perspective, it's good that I had to wait so I don't have to update business cards only once. But this is basically you get a phone number for life, and Grand Central allows you to have a set of rules, and it adapts. It basically follows you wherever you're at online. If you're on your cell, it afford calls to your cell, afford calls to a voice IP phone. You know, it basically finds you. And it's a pretty cool service. Has a central voicemail box. It does have some SMS capabilities as well. But, you know, it's what's cool about it, too, is that when the number's dialed, you can have it ring your home phone. You can have it ring your cell. Try it via voice IP. You know, so basically you're found no matter where you're at. And I think this is really, really cool. I'm excited about it. So I know that many of you have been waiting for a Grand Central phone number. Well, now it's all going to be under the Google Voice mantra. It'll be free. And I'm sure they're going to have some advanced services at some point where you'll probably be able to pay for. But this is probably the most anticipated update or rollout that many of us have been waiting for a very, very long time. Okay, speculation is mounting that Apple is going to announce the new update to the iPhone. The 3.0 software is expected to be announced next week. A lot of speculation of what's going to be going on and with the phone and what's going to be coming in the new version. So I guess we'll have to see what happens next week. But everybody's expecting video and photo capabilities to be increased, maybe MMS support, even network tethering. So there's a lot of features that are expected. We'll see if we get them with Apple 3.0. Those of you that are Camtasia users, if you want, the folks over at Camtasia are looking for beta testers for the Mac. So if you're a Mac user and you have liked using Camtasia on the PC, they're going to have a Mac version available here shortly. All right, over on the BBC did a pretty cool expose of cybercrime risks. And they talked about botnets. They actually showed how one was implemented because they built their own botnet. They showed how to do how hackers are doing denial of service attacks, how they're gaining information. There's been a little bit of controversy around it, but this is a good video to watch. It's only 2.5 minutes, but the BBC team has done some pretty cool stuff here with what they have demoed and what they're going to show you in a very, very short video on their website. So I have that linked up in the show notes. Of course, the MPAA, they're in their news right now. I guess they're having to scale back budget and staff. Their organization has been cut 15 to 20% because the companies that support it are cutting back their money that they're contributing to them. And this has mean that they can't support all the staff they have. So the MPAA is shrinking due to budget cuts. I guess they are not immune to everything that's been going on in the marketplace. So it's glad to see that companies like that's one organization that you're happy to see scaled back. All right, folks. Well, kind of a rough start here to getting back in the saddle here in Hawaii. I can count on my hand the number of mistakes I've made during this show. Actually, two hands, I think. But still jet lagging a little bit, even though I got a good night's sleep. And I'm glad you guys came out and hung out with me today. I do have some voicemails to get into and some emails as well, so I hope that you'll hang for that. As always, geeknews@gmail.com is the email address. 619-342-7365 is the voicemail number. And let me go ahead and fire off into the first voicemail of the day. We've got four to go through and then a number of emails.
Hi, Todd. This is Scott from Wisconsin.
Hey, Scott.
I was wondering what to get for recording over-the-air TV. I have a DVD recorder, but I want to record two more shows. I had an HP desktop with a digital tuner, but it didn't get good reception. Not all the channels came up. I also tried a Adaptec USB PVR, but the video was choppy. I'd like a TiVo, but I don't have a landline or internet. I have a HP laptop that I use for at hotspots, but it doesn't have a tuner. Also, if I built a desktop system, what would I need, and will it come out of sleep mode to record? Thanks for all the help. Bye.
Oh, boy. A bit of a challenge here. You know, you've got a lot of different devices that where you record a lot of different things, and probably many of those, you know, obviously you're not getting one-stop shop there. Maybe some folks in the audience will have some suggestions. I'm trying to think here off the top of my head. There's a company that we have reviewed quite a bit on the show here before, and oh my gosh, I'm having a brain fart on what their name is. I think I've got a device in the closet that I used before. What is the name of that company? All right, on the next show, I'll have some more detailed information for you. But there is one company out there that basically has a device that works as you would assume a VCR to work, but it's stored to a digital format and will record virtually anything that will be will come out of your TV. I don't know if you can record HD stuff that's actually being what it does is it sits in between your cable box and your television, and it will take, I believe, an HDMI input. Let me dig around here and see what I've got. I've got some info for you. Maybe someone from the audience will have a suggestion for us. In the meantime, they'll come in via the show notes. But I'll get you some more information of a company that you may want to look into on the next podcast. So thanks for calling in, and we'll see if we can get you a better answer. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd. Tom Wiles here, a.k.a. Dr. Tom.
Hey, Tom.
How are you doing?
Good.
I was listening to you talk about the built-in profit margins that Apple puts into the Mac Pro as well as the Mac Mini. And I think they also do that with the laptops as well. But in any case, the conclusion I've come to is that you can't really compare the hardware. I'm looking at it as the operating system. And I was a long, long time Windows user, built machines, still have a machine at home that I built 9 years ago. And, you know, I've kind of pretty much switched, for the most part, to OS X. And it is a smoother experience, particularly if you're going to do media. It's just easier. It's much smoother appearance, but performance-wise. But the thing is that Apple is also, you know, you're paying that price, you know, that premium. You're paying a premium to be able to run OS X, which is a superior operating system. And then also you have to take into account that one of the things that makes it superior operating system is Apple's putting a tremendous amount of value into it because you're getting, you can do some pretty good video editing just with OS X right out of the box. Try that with Windows and see what a clunky experience it is. You know, so that's just one example, but there's, you know, they've got like a VNC type program that's built into OS X. Of course, if you want to do that with Windows, they kind of give you something like remote desktop, whatever, but it's clunky. So if you really want to do it right, you have to buy extra software. So you just have to look at it as, you know, you're paying the premium to get to be able to run OS X. So that's kind of the way I look at it. Anyway, great show. Keep up the great work. Safe travels. Catch you later.
Hey, okay. All right, Tom. I'm going to think I'm going to have to disagree with you on this superior operating system. You know, I talked to a lot of people that have switched from the PC to the Mac, and their general consensus from people that I've talked to is that it's just different. I don't know if it's necessarily superior at all. I know that there are many things I can't do on a Mac that I can do on a PC, and it's largely software limited. That's one of the bigger things. Now, I will agree with you that they do video very, very well. I'll disagree that they do audio very well, because they really don't. They don't do audio, at least the way I like to record audio, they don't do audio very well at all. I would say that the experience you're buying for OS X is, you know, comparable to Vista. I don't think there's much difference between the operating systems and what you get one from the other, based on what's being packaged in Vista today and that you have available. You know, you can edit high-def videos right out of the box with Vista, with applications that come with the PC. Granted, it may not be as slick as what you get with iMovie, but you can do that with Vista right out of the box. So I think when I was making the comparison, I was making the comparison on hardware markup. You know, their hardware that you pay largely for, you pay a big premium. You know, you pay a premium because the hardware in the machine is not worth that much. If you break up the price of the operating system, you know, Microsoft pay, what do? If you go buy a Microsoft Vista premium off the shelf, you pay $300 or $400 for that actual box of that software. You go put that into any PC that's, you know, will handle Vista, and it'll load and it will run. So I can understand the delta of $300 or $400 that you're paying for OS X, but when the price of the machine is nearly double what the value of the actual hardware is and the value of what the actual software is, I think many people will contest that you know, you're paying a large premium just for the simple ability to have the right to be able to run or play on their operating system. And maybe that's what you said in your voicemail. Maybe I'm reiterating a different way. But, you know, if you look at the reasonable market value of the operating system as compared to what you're getting in hardware, I think it's huge. Because I don't think that it's reasonable to say that the OS X, the software is worth several thousand dollars, especially when you're buying a Mac Pro. The delta there is significantly large, and I just don't necessarily agree with the fact that that it's a superior operating system. It is an operating system. I don't necessarily agree that it is superior, based upon, You know, I use the Mac, I use the PC. For me, they're interchangeable. They both do different things. The PC does stuff much, much better in some instances than the Mac does, and the Mac does some stuff much better in some instances than the PC does. So you have to, you know, kind of balance both sides. But from a software perspective, you know, the PC's got the Mac beat 100-1 when it comes to different applications available to be able to use and do what you want to do. So I'm sure that's going to raise some voice. You know, I'm sure that's going to generate some discussion. But hey, you know, why not? I think that's, you know, I think it's fair. It's fair game. And I might be wrong, and people may disagree. But at this point in the game, I think the, you know, the operating systems, everything's pretty interchangeable. You know, I just don't see that big a deltas between the operating systems. Here's the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd, this is Bennett.
Hey, Bennett.
I've been listening for a while. I heard you talking about in one of your podcasts, internet browsers, and I was going to say, yeah, I use Firefox personally, and Internet Explorer on my computer hasn't been working at all lately. I don't know what's going on, and for some reason, my updates keep going backwards. I got Internet Explorer 8, and I keep getting updates for Internet Explorer 7, and they keep reinstalling 7 and 8 back and forth. I don't know what's going on with that, but that keeps happening. But one thing I was going to say that I really like about Firefox is that it gives you an option to, when you, like, say if your computer just shut down while you're in the middle of being on the internet, it gives you an option to restore your old tabs. So that way, if you forgot or you didn't save a website in your favorites, that is automatically on there. And that's all I wanted to say. Don't want to take up your podcast time. And thanks for the podcast. Life, I love listening.
Hey, thanks for being subscribed, and thanks for your input on IE and on Firefox. I do like that recovery mode as well, because many times I'll have 4 or 5 tabs open, and then I have this machine set to auto-update. The machine will reboot, and I'm like, oh, man, those tabs were lost. And but yet when I lost Firefox, it says, hey, you want to restore those tabs? And I say, yep, and I'm right back where I left off. So I do agree with you that as well. So thanks for your input. Definitely appreciate it. Thanks for being part of the Ohana. Okay, here's the next voicemail.
Hey, Todd. Brian here.
Hey, Brian.
Mobile applications for Android, anyway. The internet radio player. So I'm using Stream Furious and another one, Ant Player. They're both great. I love it. Great feature. But desperately need a word processor. Can't believe it's not there. Not available. At least I haven't been able to find it. But, you know, I got to thinking about the word processor, and I thought, well, wouldn't it be great if I could connect an external keyboard? And then I was kind of thinking further, wouldn't it be great if I could connect an external monitor? I think you can do that with an iPhone. But oddly enough, the same day I heard about this new NVIDIA chip, the Integra 2600. I don't know if you've covered that. I haven't heard it on the show. Maybe you had some video from CES on that. But apparently this thing supports HD,
yep,
1080p. It you can connect a large external monitor or something like a 32-inch TV or something to this thing. It uses – apparently you can get 10 hours of HD on this thing. It only uses like 4 or 6 watts or something, like 10 hours of battery life on it. Yeah, I mean, and by all practical purposes, it's a small computer. They're saying the price point for these things is going to be really low, and I think they're saying it's hard to find information about it. Most of the stuff I found just like Google searches in French, so maybe it's released in Europe or something, or closer anyway. But it sounds incredible, and I don't know if you can dig up any info, but if you have any video about it or anything from CES, let us know. It sounds amazing, and I'd like to hear your what you think of it, if you can find some information about it. All right. Love the show.
Hey, thanks for calling in. Yeah, I covered that at CES, and I think there's a video that I've already put up online on it. Did an interview with the folks at NVIDIA, so do a search on the website for it at geeknewscentral.com. And you should be able to find it. Amazing device, because it's basically a small computer that they had built into a little basically a little box. And it was basically, I guess the box size was maybe 4x4 by maybe an inch thick. And they had USB ports, they had HDMI, they had just all the different type of connections that you could even imagine would be on a normal computer. They had 5.1 surround sound, the whole nine yards. They had the full set of connections you would expect from a PC in just a tiny, tiny little box. Now, that's not something that you're probably going to see in a mobile device, I don't think, anytime soon. But I might be wrong on that, because who knows what they're going to, if they're going to partner up with someone and actually put one of these into a, you know, make it small enough to put it into a mobile PC, a mobile phone. But, yeah, absolutely amazing little box. And power requirements on it a little heftier than I think what you would normally find from a mobile device, but we'll see what happens. You know, they're doing some pretty cool stuff with that, and I'm sure they could dumb it down enough to have it, you know, with a limited number of ports and so forth on a mobile device, and yeah, it would be really cool. But yeah, I'll see if I can find the link to it in the show notes. I'll put it up in the show notes for you. All right, folks, that wraps up the voicemails we've got from the last podcast. Let me go ahead here and bust into the email. I got a number of emails from Trucker Tom sending me links to different items. I want to thank him for all the links he's sent me today. And I'll have these up in the show notes. One of them he sent up was a warning about don't wearing a medical patch during an MRI. Got an email from Molly. He said, "Hey Todd, unfortunately you are this far from being reporting as a spam source." Well, Molly apparently is getting our newsletter, and she is having a hard time unsubscribing from the newsletter. If any of you are listening to the show and you are getting the newsletter and you are not able to unsubscribe from the show, please email me immediately and let me know, and I will manually remove you from the list. She emailed me on from an email address that was not in our mailing list software. So she apparently had originally signed up to the list with a different email, and I was unable to find her. So she's trying to figure that out, but we don't want to send the newsletter to anyone that does not want to get it. There is a unsubscribe link at the bottom of every post, which should lead you back to Google to be able to unsubscribe from the list. But if you're having a hard time unsubscribing, we definitely want you to let us know, because we don't want anyone to get an email that's not supposed to be getting email, because it's no need to annoy anyone from that perspective. But probably, I had it said to her, it says log in underneath your Google name and see if you're subscribed that way. And she did not provide me any feedback on that. So hopefully she gets that squared away. Hey, I want to thank Greg for sending condolences. Definitely appreciate that. It is much appreciated. Another link from Trucker Tom was of course, Google getting ready to launch their Google Voices, and I'll have that link up. Got an email from Keith, and that actual email is loading here slowly. I did not preload these things. He basically links me to a video on FARC. I'll have that up for all of you. And thanks for Trucker Tom for sending the video file for the funeral organ. We'll play around with that a little bit here in the future. I've got an email from Brian, and I believe Brian actually called the voicemail talking about the NVIDIA 2600 APX chip. Have that linked up in the show notes. I got an email on about scientists being able to read our minds. This is a FT.com article. And also about this new mobile phone battery that can be charged in 10 seconds. So a number of those links sent to me by Trucker Tom, and, of course, regular listener comments. All right, folks, we're here at the end of the show. Geeknews@gmail.com is the email address, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline is 619-342-7365. Had just a few people hanging out on Ustream today, not too many, because we're not recording during our normal time. So I want to thank those folks for hanging out. And then of course, those of you that are getting the audio podcast, thanks for being part of the Ohana. Thanks for staying subscribed. Make sure you share information about the show with those that you know and love. And your geeky friends out there, definitely turn them on to the podcast. You can find more content about the show at geeknewscentral.com, of course. And, of course, we thank all of our contributing writers that are contributing content at geeknewscentral.com. And I am behind. I have gotten at least a dozen requests for people that are looking to be authors or writers on geeknewscentral.com, and I am going to be adding a couple of more hired positions here in the next week. So I'm back from Japan getting caught up. So a lot of stuff to get caught up on for all of you, and deliver some of this stuff that I'm behind on. So until then, until next Tuesday when I'm up with the new live show, thanks for hanging out with me, and thanks for staying subscribed. Everyone have a great weekend. Until next time, take care, and aloha.